good morning. It's 12 minutes past 8 o'clock. Bob O'Connor hosting Galesburg Live this morning, our second hour. And we've got quite the crew in here today. I don't think I've had five people in as well as myself at the same time. And it's fun. We're going to have a long talk today about Black Lives Matter, the Galesburg angle, how things work here, and many of the insights and thoughts of quite a few community leaders here in Galesburg. And I'll just start with our elected official, Sheriff Dave Clegg. Welcome to the studios, and thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Also, in the studio this morning, John Hunnigan, the chair of the Community Relations Commission.
Yes.
Good morning, and thank you.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm also the representative for the Knox County Board for District 2.
Yes, that's right. There's quite a few hats that you wear, also
several.
From Stone Hays. And I'm going to try and figure out how to position myself so I can see around everybody, because it's a lot of people this morning. And thank you all for coming in. Anthony Law, Outreach Director at Carl Sandburg College, also a member of the commission.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning, and good to see you again. Wendell Hunnigan, instructor for a long time at Sandburg and Knox. And now you're at Monmouth, or is it the other way around, Wendell?
I was over 30 years at Carl Sandburg College, yes. And now I'm teaching at both schools, Monmouth.
Oh, you're both teaching.
Knox College.
You're teaching during retirement.
Yeah, I'm teaching during retirement.
It's they a new definition of being retired.
That's right. That's right.
Thank you for coming in. And our representative from Carl Sandburg College, he's a member of Men of Distinction and one of the co-organizers of the Black Lives Matter march along Henderson Street in earlier July, Dakota Williams.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Thank you for coming in. We had planned on having Olivia Graves in. She was also a co-organizer of the march along Henderson in July, and she has to work.
Yes.
So we do our jobs.
Right. We thank Dakota for filling in such short notice. I gave Dakota a call yesterday, and he was kind enough to say yes. I was afraid he was going to say, well, I need some little time here to prepare, but that was great that he was able to come in.
That's good. I thank you for that, because I wanted to get a lot of different perspectives, a lot of insights, because I know you, Sheriff Clegg, and Anthony and John, and both Wendell and Dakota are meeting for the first time. But we are in a room of thoughtful, intelligent community leaders. And John, I'm going to start the ball rolling.
Sure. You know, it was interesting. It was a discussion, actually, Bob, you and I had. And we were talking about what are some things that are here important in town, and especially recently that we had the march that was just so well organized and so, I thought, so beautifully executed was the Black Lives Matter march that happened a few weeks ago along Henderson. And Tony Law here and Dakota and Olivia Graves and, you know, members of the Carl Sandburg student body and members of the community, you know, helped organize that. And to be honest, I think when the march was organized, there was concerns, of course, as like what kind of reception would that receive here in Galesburg? Was there going to be some pushback, some negative protesters? So we decided, you know, I thought it would be a good chance to kind of talk about some of these issues. We've had some issues, obviously, nationally, which have divided people. People are very, you know, specific on how they feel. Unfortunately, that's kind of how our politics is now. It's either you are this or you are that. And so I thought maybe this would be a good time or an opportunity to have these discussions. How do we kind of bridge some of these ideals? You know, why does Black Lives Matter? Why does Police Lives Matter? You know, do they have to mutually be exclusive? You know, we say, you know, I think especially for people with the Black Lives Matter, you know, we try to be inclusive and say the things like all lives matter, but that's for many people that are part of that movement, that's actually an insult as to, because it's very specific as to what we're talking about, that the issue of Black Lives Matter is about some specific instances that have happened in this community or, you know, in our nation. And that's especially why I wanted Dave to be a part of this conversation. And I wanted, you know, Tony Law and my brother Wendell, who, you know, is basically a walking encyclopedia of you know, social movements. And, you know, let's just open up some of this dialogue to see why do we think like this, and, you know, how can we kind of narrow this, you know, this these differences.
Good. It's a very large topic. It's hard to put your mind around it when, at least for me, because I'm trying to gauge the difference between what I've witnessed on the national scene, mm-hmm. and here in Galesburg in our community. We've had good conversations about mm-hmm. this. But Sheriff Clegg, I'd like to know, and what I'd like to avoid using is like your side of things, because it seems to me there's too many sides.
Oh, I think you're 100% right. And I think John gave an excellent overview. You know, the key thing that John said was dialogue, conversation. When both sides, so to speak, divide and that communication line is no longer present, we've got a problem. And I think here locally, the communication line has been opened, maybe not as extensively as what we would like, but it's been open. And I think that speaks volumes for all of the citizens of Knox County, that we are, human lives matter. Maybe that should be narrowed down. My life matters. Everybody's life in this room matters. And the time that it doesn't matter, we have a very, very major issue on our hands. So I think that nationally, as John said, we've got issues. We have problems. I think the one thing that was very apparent to me early on was the news broadcasters were always saying, there has to be communications. Has to be. And I think that communication, long before this started, I think the communication line was very much open, which leads this community to be relatively safe.
Mm-hmm. I have read, you know, and I've talked with people and read about the march, about the event at City Hall on the steps late in July, boiling it down to some of the key things that people were talking about. There's a need for challenging conversations, which I hope that we can have a semi-challenging conversation this morning. I think Mayor Pritchard was quoted as saying the key is listening. We have to listen to everybody. Everybody's got a viable input. It definitely isn't blue lives versus black lives in Galesburg. You know, I'm not black and I'm not a police officer. So where does that leave me? I'm a witness, I'm a spectator, and I'm shocked, like most of the people in the nation are. And a fourth thing that is, you're right, you've said all lives matter. But it's how we get to that point, I think, in not ruffling feathers, and making sure that people understand what it is when we say black lives matter, all lives matter, police lives matter. I can't iron out the differences with a blanket statement, but I guess that's what dialogue is for.
And not to interrupt, but, you know, 42 years as law enforcement.
Right.
I've seen a lot of blood. And one thing that is unique, it's red. No matter what race you are, it's red.
All the blood is red. Anthony, or do you like Tony?
Either one is fine. That's okay. Fine. Yes, sir.
You brought in to Galesburg Live or to an evening news that I was filling in for, you brought in students, men of distinction and women of character from
yes,
Sandburg.
Sir. Yes, sir.
And your role as outreach director at Sandburg. What's the sentiment on campus?
Well, to be honest, we do come from a community that is engaging and that for the most part, compared to other communities, there is conversation, there is dialogue. But the reality is, for the demographic that I work with on a regular basis, we don't, Galesburg is not in a bubble. What that means is the things that are happening nationally do have an effect. You get on social media, you turn on the television, you see this. It has to be addressed. We have to ensure that we are proactive as a community. To be honest, if you looked at the incident that happened in Minnesota, and Dave can attest, he can kind of relate to this. The day after that shooting, I saw a gentleman on the TV giving a press conference who was terrified. He was the interim chief. Now, if you know anything about interim, that means he was put in there to fill in. You know, he probably thought, oh, this is, he's probably a captain of patrol or something of that nature. And he probably thought, okay, I'll just do this, test the water, see if this is a job I want, you know, kind of feel. The next, you know, he, in his wildest dreams, he never imagined he would be on national television. I looked at that man and I had empathy for him. I said, my God, he's not prepared for this. And who would be, even a tenured chief? Mm-hmm. But the fact is, his community, the day before, if you asked him if this incident could ever happen here, he would have probably said, no, I don't see it happening in our community. And that's the reality. So we sit here and say, not in Galesburg, until it happens in Galesburg. Every community this has happened at, where an incident has happened and then outside entities make it bigger than it was, said no the day before. So the thing is, with us, is having that dialogue. Now, like I said, the students that I deal with, they're asking questions. They want to know. They are the leaders of our community. We, as my demographic, we try to hold on to it as long as we can. But the reality is, if we don't start to share that and have that dialogue with them and empower them to be the leadership, you know, I'm on the downswing. I got about 20, maybe 30 years left on this earth if I take care of myself. And then what? We want Galesburg as a community to last much longer than that. So we've got to empower them. We've got to address those things. We've got to. And with the Black Lives Matter, I know with the march, the term Black Lives Matter was insightful to some people. And I want to explain from our perspective, where we had a dialogue beforehand, and we were concerned about the naming. But we said, there is a group of people at this point who do not value themselves, who do not feel valued. And so if they need to know, that demographic, whoever that may be, that right now, you matter. You matter to me, you matter to him, you matter to you, and you need to matter to yourself. And then the same way, if you, our march happened to be, and it was an awareness march, not a protest, I want to stress that. Our march happened to be right after the shooting in Dallas. We could not, in good conscience, start that awareness march without paying homage and respect to the officers that lost their lives.
Right.
Because at that moment, their lives matter. Every police officer out there needed to know that this, your death does not change, make it better, a better world for me. As you know, my life may still not matter, but your death is not the answer. What we want is for both, all sides, to work together and to be able to say with comfort, I can say comfortably, not because I'm a former police officer, but I have the utmost respect for police officers, that blue lives matter. And it doesn't take away from me being African American. It doesn't take away from my beliefs that black lives matter, because they do. Black lives matter. Women's lives matter. Hispanic lives matter. I don't feel, when I say that, it's not like, oh my gosh, that takes away from me. And hopefully, it shouldn't take away from anybody in this room, because ultimately, If I'm not comfortable saying each one of those things, how can I say that all lives matter? Because each one of those is part of that. So I'm telling a lie.
Right.
If you can't say an individual group, you can't say all.
That's Anthony Law from Carl Sandburg College Outreach Director and also a board member of the Galesburg Community Relations Commission. Well said. It has to be inclusive. And I think that everybody in the room is pretty much on board with that. I want to get a word in with Dakota Williams out of the Men of Distinction at Carl Sandburg College and an organizer of the Awareness March on Henderson. What do you think about the things that we've already been talking about here this morning?
I think we've covered a whole lot, honestly. I know that we started the march after the Alton Sterling shootings and the Philando Castile, I believe was his name, right, shootings. And it got to the point where there was literally that shooting happened not even 24 hours apart from each other. And it got to the point where I was angry, I was afraid, and I was worried about the future of immediately what I thought of was my cousins, my younger cousins that are out there. And I didn't want them to have to get the same conversations that I got growing up. I was always told to watch your surroundings, you know, make sure that you're not in a compromising position at any time. If you do get in a position, be respectful, you know, get pulled over, keep your hands on the steering wheel. I was taught all these right things to do. But when someone is killed for doing everything that they're asked by a police officer, I don't know what is there to be taught at that point. If you can't do what you're been told for years, and that everyone in a place of power tells you to do, and still die for no reason, then I felt like there needed to be something done. That's why we did the march. And I know people think that Black Lives Matter is not inclusive of police. I completely disagree on that. Sadly, we didn't get any officers at the march. Wish we could have, but that was just the scenario that happened. But when people say that they downplay the facts that these innocent lives are lost, despite whatever their past was, in that moment they're innocent for whatever they're doing, and then they compare it to like the Dallas shooting, which was a travesty. It's the idea that when you're a police officer, you sign up for the job and you know it's a dangerous job. All right, you know that at any moment you can be in a compromising situation in which you have to make life-changing decisions. And I don't feel that it's fair to compare the situations as a police officer to just a civilian, because I shouldn't have to go outside thinking the same, having the same mindset as a police officer, that at any moment I can die, at any moment I can be in a situation that could be life-changing, because that's not what I signed up for. I didn't sign up to be in dangerous situations. I didn't sign up to protect people. That's their job. And I'd like to say that the people at Galesburg, the police officers at Galesburg in Knox County, are doing good jobs. I don't want to single anybody out or make people to get the idea that there's something wrong in Galesburg, because there isn't anything wrong in Galesburg. I mean, there's problems in every community, but as we showed during the march, with all the support that we got, all the marchers that came out, the cars driving by, honking in support, that this community is close, and we're for each other. We're all trying to keep Galesburg together. It's not like a divisive community at all.
Thank you. Dakota Williams, he's a member of the Men of Distinction and a student at Carl Sandburg College. Sheriff Clegg, there, like he said, there is a reasonable expectation that the expectations are different for a civilian and for a police officer during the day. I think he had a good point.
Oh, I think he's got a very good point. You know, it's sad to say that 1% of law enforcement are the bad apples, but it's great to hear a younger person say that he was taught the do's and don'ts when law enforcement stops. In fact, it's been such a controversial area for law enforcement that my school liaison officer is now part of driver's ed to teach those students what to do in the event that they are stopped. You know, number one, they're nervous. Number two, I, as law enforcement, don't really know what I'm about to get into. But I applaud you, Dakota, for several things. Knowing right from wrong, being concerned about your well-being, and organizing a peaceful awareness march that went very well and was well received, very well received in the law enforcement community as well. I think that speaks volumes for not only the representation of Black Lives Matter, it also speaks volumes for everything to be peaceful, the respect that is observed, whether you are a participant or somebody driving by. And you expressed a concern early on that not sure what you were going to receive. There could be some haters out there. And again, I think that speaks volumes for the community. There wasn't anything like that.
And I'll have to be honest, when the march happened and I was a participant, I vacillated. Did I want to participate or not? Because I was concerned about the community as far as like how they were going to respond. I even called Tony and said, Tony, what I said, I'm not in any way trying to tell you what to do. I'm just, you know, just sharing with you some of my concerns, and my concerns are the safety of these young people and of the marches, because we had no idea. No one had any idea what was how this was going to be perceived. And I have to be honest, I was pleasantly shocked how well it went. I think if we're honest, though, there may have been some outside factors why it was so smooth. There were some events in town that may have taken some of the people that could have been the troublemakers away. But I think one of the indelible moments for me during the march was to see people come out of the fast food restaurants and applaud these young people and this movement. That told me that these are the people who are probably paid minimum wage, who don't have a large voice, but this is something near and dear to their heart. This is something that they can relate to, and so it really touches all of America, these type of issues.
Yeah, we are connected. We are connected to America. These things, whoever said it, we don't live in a bubble. That's John Hunnigan, the chair of Community Relations Commission here in Galesburg. We're going to continue with this Galesburg Live this morning. It's 8:35. We got to stop for a check of the news with Tyler Bachman, and we'll be back. And I want to get some insight from Wendell Hunnigan, a store of knowledge. And we'll be back with all of this this morning at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Bob O'Connor.
8:40 at WGIL. Bob O'Connor in with Sheriff Dave Clegg, John Hunnigan, Anthony Law, Dakota Williams, and a man we haven't spoken to yet about Black Lives Matter and its meaning, but he knows a lot. Historian, teacher, instructor, Wendell Hunnigan. And I'm glad to get you involved in the conversation, Wendell.
Okay.
You would be able to give us some background on meaning.
Yes, I'd like to talk a little bit about how the hashtag of Black Lives Matter came about. This movement started in 2013 after the murder of Trayvon Martin, and three very techie and very media savvy women began to discuss this on the internet. And a lot of people don't know that Black Lives Matter was started by women. mm-hmm. not men. It was started by gay women and not heterosexual women. And after George Zimmerman was found not guilty, I think it was Patrice Cullors, who was one of the founders of Black Lives Matter, basically said, Black Lives Matter. That was her frustration with the verdict, and it caught on. And since that time, people have taken offense to that term because of the fact it seems to indicate that all lives matter. But historically, if you look at America, Black lives have never really mattered. For 240 years, the African Americans were in slavery. Black lives did not matter during slavery. After Reconstruction, or let me call the failure of Reconstruction, Black lives did not matter. In 1892, when African American was lynched every other day in the United States, from 1900 to the 1950s, Black lives did not matter. My father served in a Jim Crow army under the auspices of that he was fighting for freedom. So it indicates, it was just to me, that hashtag points to an indication, indicates that Black lives have not mattered for quite a long time in this country. And as I was listening to Dakota, he was talking about what his parents taught him how to act when he was in the presence of law enforcement. And I'm the father of three young Black men, and we also had to have that, quote, talk about how to behave. And I'll never forget, I think I'm, Tony, you might remember this. My son was able to buy a high-priced car in St. Louis, I think it was a BMW, and he was so excited about it. And he told me he had this and he had that, and he was going to drive it various places. And my wife and I had to sort of put a damper on his enthusiasm and say, you have to be careful where you drive that car. You cannot drive that car with complete impunity throughout the city of St. Louis. And that's just one of the frustrations that I think many Black parents have of these two different realities with law enforcement. And I consider Black Lives Matter to be the most important social movement since the Civil Rights Movement. It is something that has not only had an effect upon this country, it has gone all over the world, these movements. Just, I believe yesterday there was a Black Lives Movement a protest in Great Britain near Heathrow mm-hmm. Airport. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is something that has definitely touched an important chord in this throughout the world.
Well, it addresses issues of awareness, behavior, and results that go back hundreds of years.
It does. It does. And and the other thing about Black lives, again, looking at here at Dakota, this has brought another generation, a new generation, into the human rights movement. And we like to think that so many people in this country think that since Dr. King died, everything's okay in this country. And I've told my students years and years that if you want to look at civil rights in this country, sometimes it's two steps forward, one step back. Sometimes it's three steps forward and it's two steps back. But it wasn't the civil rights movement, it's the civil rights struggle that we are still engaged in this country.
Yeah, we're not in the so-called post-racial era since we've elected a Black president.
Absolutely.
There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to be taught. The people in the studio this morning are people that set examples. They are community leaders. I want to go through the list of names again. We were listening to Wendell Hunnigan. He's a longtime activist, local leader, and instructor, college educator. Anthony Law, outreach director at Carl Sandburg College. John Hunnigan, the chair of the Community Relations Commission here in Galesburg. Dakota Williams, a member of the Men of Distinction at Carl Sandburg College and a student there, and one of the co-organizers of the Black Lives Matter march along Henderson earlier in July, and Sheriff Dave Click. It's such a large topic, I don't even really know almost where you can go into. A question for Sheriff Clegg. We were talking earlier about we have reasonable expectations. Dakota's mention of a civilian's reasonable expectation of safety going outside. It isn't the same as a police officer's reasonable expectation because you have to be ready. Anything can happen at any moment. Does that lead towards a sense of, well, there is obviously, it has to be a sense of danger. How does that reasonable expectation as a professional, how does that affect an officer's viewpoint just going out into the day?
You know, I think one of the recent laws that changed the mindset of law enforcement is the concealed carry. And you, as law enforcement, did not come across that many people that had a gun. And if they had a gun, they were arrested and put in jail. Now you almost have to assume that every time that you go to a traffic stop, make a traffic stop, that either the driver and or occupants, somebody's going to be armed. That puts an entirely different cast upon the mindset of law enforcement. And the other side of that issue, I think, is common sense. You know, if I am sitting behind the wheel of the car and my hands are on that steering wheel, you know, I'm not going to let my guard down, but I know that things are copacetic in that that person is cooperating. Mm-hmm. And I would like to think, too, that that person would say, you know, I do have a gun. I've got to carry concealed license or permit. I know as a law enforcement officer, if I'm stopped, which I have been, and I know I have my gun, my hands are glued to that wheel. I don't want to move. So I think there's just been an incredible amount of laws that have been changed or enacted that have taken that mindset now from, yeah, I know it's a dangerous job. I know it's a dangerous job, but I'm going on a barking dog call. You know, what are the odds? The odds are pretty good now that somebody might be armed, whereas in the past, maybe not. So now I'm going to have to change that mindset to where I'm a little bit more on the offensive and be aware of my surroundings. And I'm not saying confront everybody as though they're dangerous. By no means. Common sense. And I go back to common sense in that when I was at the FBI Academy, every Wednesday night we had to be in suit and tie and we had a meeting. We had a class discussion, class being 240 students from 24 different countries. The very first night was we had to list top 10 priorities if I were a chief or sheriff of what I was looking at to hire somebody. And in this class that I was a part of, 82% had college degrees. 8 of them had doctorate degrees. So I'm assuming education is probably going to be number one. Education was number 4. Number 1 was common sense, which we all know, and we could all sit here for days and debate, how do you get it? Are you born with it? Is it a taught trait? I, you know, who knows? But common sense. And in the years that I have been, and especially now as sheriff, interviewing people, you get a sense of common sense when you're talking to that person. And unfortunately, the majority don't have it.
But Sheriff, I'd like to speak to this issue of profiling. Feeling as though you are being targeted. Chris Rock, the comedian and satirist, said that sometimes he feels like he was born a suspect. And there's just something about being Black and being law enforcement that creates a potential conflict. I just want you to speak to that.
And Wendell, I would agree with what you're saying. You know, there is that 1% that will continue doing just the concerns that you're expressing right now. Those concerns should be addressed, but you typically, the person that's last to find out about those issues of that officer or deputy is going to be the sheriff or the chief of police. That needs to be brought forward. And, you know, we can give them all types of training, which we do. I mean, nationally we do, locally we do. But that 1% puts that bad taste in everybody's mouth. And I don't care what race, nationality are, it creates a problem and a divide.
And if I can interject real quick, I want to say, as far as Sheriff Clegg is concerned, I can be honest, he's been active. He does engage those groups that perceiving that he's not a part of, but he makes himself a part of. I've seen him at NAACP meetings. He's here where a lot of law enforcement officers would not be. His staff is diversified greatly since he's taken his position. One of the things is the mystery of, for most of our law enforcement officers, their relationship with especially men of color, is limited at best. The only thing they have to know what a Black man is what the media perceives them to be, or some of the negative connotations that they have. So that risk factor, that issue, that concern when that first encounter, it doesn't start at zero because I don't know. So I'm assuming that this is a risk, whether this person be 18 or 75. It's not based on their actions, it's based on my perception, the mental model I bring, and the fact that their pigmentation is a little darker than what I'm used to, that what I have first place knowledge of. I'm afraid. And my fear usually will result in, like Sheriff Clegg said, at every encounter that a police officer has, there's at least one gun. And that's his. And that makes him very, very dangerous. So one of the things to be proactive, get to know your community. That's, you know, it takes more than talking about it. It takes more than that internal training. You can train on diversity, but you have to put that in practical use. There, get out and know meet the people that you know the least about until they no longer exist. That's the key. We've got to engage. We've got to encourage. We've got to diversify even our departments. And that's more than just hiring every 2 years. That is actively taking ownership of the history that Mr. Hunnigan said. Because whether you were a part of that history, I can go on the computer and find images of police officers abusing African Americans historically. You didn't have to be there, but as long as you wear the badge, you have to own that. That's our shared history. So what are you actively doing to negate that history? You're never going to change it, but to show that we've had progress, because if not, that's my reality.
Well, Anthony, what is community law enforcement? Or David, what is community policing?
Well, you know,
do we have that here in this community?
I don't believe
this
so.
Community?
I do not believe so. I'll say this, and that's what I was trying to get Bob's attention because I wanted to address just that. Back before there was ever a clause or a term that was community policing, Chief Jim Frakes made it mandatory that you actually got out of your car and you walked. What better way to meet people? And that was true on first, second, and third shift. It's amazing how many people are out on third shift. But you still got out. Well, then some of the shift supervisors extended that by saying, okay, for your activity that you turn in, you have to put down a name of that person that you contacted, that you spoke with. That was long before the term community policing ever came. Then when Chief Schlaff became chief after Frakes retired, that was heavily reinforced by Chief Schlaff. And it maintained that up until his retirement. Now, you know, the argument obviously would be, well, the calls for service has increased and our departments have decreased. But you can still get out and talk.
What about body cams?
Body cams, I think, is a must. Now, there's two downsides to that. Is number one, the expense. It's going to be costly. The most expensive part is where it's downloaded and how long you have to maintain it. That's the expense. I would have them right now, but the county cannot afford that expense. So
county board
because
member
we have to look. Yes, I mean we have to look at. I mean, you know, Dave was one of the leaders of why we are going to hopefully continue the 911 system, and that's something that we take for granted. You think that when you call 911, those three digits, that it works. So there's a lot of things I think that we just kind of take for granted that the police are supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But as you're attesting to, as these things create our budgetary issues, their training issues, their hiring issues, as Tony addressed, what are we doing beyond every 2 years to go through that cycle to making sure that we get people that are best qualified, you know, people, young people like Dakota, who is passionate about, you know, what can the people of his generation do to be a part of the process? You know, how do they be included? You know, I personally, I think Dave is, or I, you know, and I, because he's a friend, I Sheriff Clegg. it's been very good. Sheriff Clegg has been very good, as far as I think, in getting out into the community and coming to groups. You know, you've come to meetings in the past. I've invited you to. I know he's, you know, you've gone to meetings that Tony has. What we would like to see is more, I think, of more of an outreach with law enforcement, with the minority community. You know, there. Hopefully, we do that more than just once a year, kind of thing, or once every 2 year type thing. You know, some of the things are, where are young African American or where do minorities hang out? How do we get to those? As you know, Tony has the campus. There, not just at Sandberg, and we also have at Knox College, but you know, we go to places where they can be engaged and to actively, you know, get them to be a part of this process. I think that's going to help. It's not going to solve it. It would help, though, and that's some of the diversity, and that's, you know, and that's been an issue in this community, especially. We're still working on our diversity issues here. You know, and but I think, as Wendell said, you know, it's two steps forward, one step back, three steps forward, two steps back at times.
So in other words, maybe we can't help who we are. We are who we are, but we can learn.
Absolutely.
Does anybody have any final thoughts to add? Because we're going to probably.
Can I just quote Dr. Martin Luther King very quickly? People fail to get along because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They don't know each other because they have not communicated with each other. And I think that if we can get that dialogue going, as everybody here is trying and have tried, and we can continue it, Galesburg will be an ideal spot for the news media to say, what did the citizens do to change everything?
What did we do right here?
Yes.
I want to thank everybody for coming in. And
thank you.
Throw it out an idea down the road to maybe do this again.
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
I have appreciated the thoughtful, heartfelt insights, inputs, that we've heard this morning since 8:15. I'm just impressed. And I want to thank, I'll go from my left here, Wendell Hunnigan, educator, longtime advocate and activist. John Hunnigan, a member of the county board, chair of the Community Relations Commission, and good guy. Thank you for coming
thank
in
you.
And
thanks,
helping
thanks.
To and helping to get this well, off. On you know you really kind of put this together.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Bob. And I, you know, again, let's continue the dialogue. You know, let's continue. But instead of just talking, though, it's as we always say, is we have to have action as well. You know, and we have to do something besides just talk about how we want to make things better.
And Sheriff Dave Clegg, thank you.
Thank you.
You have had good input this morning. Valuable. Anthony Law, Tony Law, mm-hmm. from Carl Sandburg College, also a member of the Community Relations Commission and the Outreach Director. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. And if I can just leave with one thing.
Yes.
I'd like to say, and I say this is my going to be my tag, but Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, because all lives matter.
Thank you
When you can say that comfortably, you got it.
There you go. And the youngest member, I'm going to just guess, the youngest member of this panel this morning.
By far.
Dakota Williams, student at Carl Sandburg College and a member of the Men of Distinction and a co-organizer of early July's Black Lives Matter Awareness March along Henderson Street. Thank you for your input. We were all in our 20s at one point. And we all had pretty cool ideas about what the world was going to be, what the world is, and we have had to evolve. I think you're on a good starting point. I think maybe we all thought we all were once as well. Keep up the good work. Thanks for being involved.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Just like John said, we have ideas. As you said, we have ideas of where we're going to go. But without anybody pushing those ideas along, we're going to stay stagnant and just be in the same spot for the next 20 years, next 30 years, waiting for the next generation to come along and change something. But that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, trying to get those ideas moving along.
Thank you. Thank you. I think the community should thank you. All right, gentlemen, that's about all we have for today, and we are running out of time, and I sure appreciate the input, the work, and the effort. It's been a very good hour. I'm Bob O'Connor. We'll be hosting Galesburg Live later on this month, and I invite you to tune in every Saturday morning for a couple of hours conversation every Saturday on WGIL. Have a good day.